Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all here this week. Always happy to be with you all here. Always a blast. No idea when Jane Silk will be hosting again, but you know, I think it happens someday. Who knows? She has informed me of some guests that she wanted. If we ever got a hold of these bad boy celebrities, we'd certainly have her back. Anyway, the Silk or Joe Show is brought to you by the Main Street Radio Network. So we do want to thank Main Street Radio for allowing this program to exist, naturally. And, you know, with it, unlike the Al and Nathan Show, which I guest hosted earlier this week, the Silk or Joe Show, well, it's been with the Main Street Radio Network its entire existence. Imagine that. The entire 11 years, almost, 10 and a half that we've been around. It's been under the auspices of the Main Street Radio Network, so we want to thank them. You can go to mainstreetradionetwork.com. That's their website. You'll find the Silk or Joe Show up there as well. And you'll find podcasts of the show, previous editions of the show, all up there, explanations of the show, in case you decide that you want to cut out and stop listening while I spoil it here. And first, you want to just read up what you're about to hear on the program. Although I don't have episode synopses on there. I don't even know why I'd call it an episode. It's a podcast, but it's a synopsis. But yeah, synopsis implies that there's something fictional or episodic about it, and calling it an episode implies there's something episodic or fictional about it. Not the case, but anyway, it's all on mainstreetradionetwork.com, regardless of the words and verbiage that you wish to use to describe it. And you can listen to it live as well on the nice little streaming option they have on the website when it airs on Saturdays at noon, and also you can catch it on Sundays at noon as well, in case you miss the Saturday airing, at least the live airing. Or if you missed all of them, you're obviously listening to us to the podcast, so none of that matters. You can listen to it on your own schedule, but don't wait too long. The topics we cover, why here today, gone tomorrow, you know? Anyway, we do have a lot of stuff to get to in this program. We're going to have some guests as well, just not in this segment, but you're probably used to that by now, those of you who've listened in enough. So, you know, we've got to, of course, get a word in on the Trump trials and tribulations that have been going on. And, you know, earlier today, I was reading about this article in the Associated Press about Harvey Weinstein, of all people, who his conviction was overturned. You know, you thought that that was a shoo-in, right? A sure thing. But as it turns out, it was not. They overdid it, I guess, and this higher court ruled that, hey, you overdid it, you guys went too far in your case, because apparently they brought in a bunch of witnesses, I guess character witnesses, that described Harvey Weinstein in general as a bad person with nothing actually related to the rapes he was accused of. So because the character witnesses went a little too far afield, the higher court, you know, the jury with the higher court had a 4-3 ruling that, or maybe it was the judges on the court had a 4-3 ruling that, okay, well, this is, you went too far, we gotta throw the case out, you gotta do a retrial. And that same, this is New York court system, New York State court systems that did this, by the way. So now that same court system is out there with the Trump trials. And we've seen how those have gone, haven't we? It's been a bit of a mess with all them and the legally dubious items that they're performing with those Trump trials. Yeah, it's like I was talking about in the Alan Nathan Show. Let's take the Stormy Daniels one. Her last name is plural. There are multiple Daniels there. So with that case, they're trying to say that this misdemeanor that expired years ago, the statute of limitations on it expired. They couldn't convict it anymore, but they couldn't convict it anyway because the Federal Election Commission said what he did isn't a crime, so go away, don't bother him. So the new, and then the misdemeanor possibility of even charging him for it expired, related to, you know, election money or whatever. So what they did was they said, well, actually, it's connected to a felony. And because it's connected to this felony, that means that we can re-prosecute him for this. That means we can still continue. Well, not re-prosecute. That means we can prosecute him despite the statute of limitations running out. So the thing is, though, this felony that they say applies actually doesn't apply. It's this New York state law that says something about illegally promoting your campaign, but this New York state law only applies to candidates of New York state offices. It does not apply to federal elections, i.e. what Donald Trump was running for. So they're trying to say this law that doesn't apply allows them to prosecute a crime that otherwise has expired. And that's what they're going after him with, the Stormy Daniels hush money. Democrats have absolutely no problem with this, whether or not it gets thrown away by a higher court like the Harvey Weinstein stuff because they got too zealous about prosecuting it. I don't think they actually care. They just want to be able to say he was convicted and then throw it out. And the Bill Cosby convictions, too, they got thrown out. So, again, it's zealous prosecutors trying to make a name for themselves in the moment, trying to get a surefire conviction, and it ends up getting thrown out because they didn't do their job properly. We've seen this before with liberal prosecutors. We saw this in Baltimore with, the name is slipping my mind now because I actually did not, this is a bit of a tangent from what I have written down as my notes. But remember the Freddie Gray stuff in Baltimore, though, the prosecutor there who just wanted a conviction to keep with the public opinion of the moment so that she could get reelected or whatever. That prosecutor ended up like, the subpoenas had the wrong addresses and the wrong names on them. That's how badly she rushed things. So it was a real mess that prosecutor made of the case. And of course, the officers got off. No one was charged because of her just absolute incompetence in the matter. And then the Democrats, were like, oh, this is a sign of racism. No, it was a sign she's an idiot. It didn't even matter if the police officer's guilty or not. This prosecutor was not the one to prosecute them because of how badly she screwed it up looking for the limelight there and looking for an election win or whatever. So Alvin Bragg, that is basically what his whole thing has been. Get me elected and vote for me and I will prosecute the hell out of Trump. Letitia James, the New York State Attorney General, same thing. Get me elected, vote for me, and I will prosecute the hell out of Trump. They didn't actually say what they would prosecute him for. Pretty much, you name the man, I'll find the crime, sort of Stalinist thing. And sure enough, they did. They found, even though the crime isn't real, they still found one and made it up and put it through the court. And when it gets overturned, liberals are going to be like, oh, it's a two-tier justice system. Trump got off. No, it's a two-tier justice system. The fact that these fake crimes were even brought against him to begin with. And let me tell you something. It's a message to all of you as well, all you Trump supporters out there as well, or just anyone that Democrats eventually decide that they disagree with. They will do this to you. And unlike Trump, you don't have millions of dollars to pay all this stuff. You saw what happened with the real estate case that Trump had, where he did nothing wrong. Nobody who was involved thought he did anything wrong. His properties were valued correctly. Even CNN had to admit that later on. And yet the court decided he didn't value his properties correctly before the case even went to trial. Before the trial even started, the judge just said, summary judgment, I'm only going to listen to the prosecutor. I'm not going to listen to the defense. My mind is made up already. And then it just, they just laid this $500 million fine onto Trump for not violating any laws. If they can do that to someone for not violating any laws, what can they do to you for not violating any laws if you're one of their political opponents? Why, we have already an elderly Holocaust survivor being persecuted for practicing her religion, not by Nazis, not by the far right, which Democrats say are the Nazis, but by Democrats themselves, the Biden Department of Justice. They're trying to imprison this Holocaust survivor because she dared to pray outside an abortion clinic. That sentence is going for 10 to 11 years. Meanwhile, if you're a Democrat and you murder a Republican, as happened, I keep mentioning this crime, the Democrat who hopped into his truck ran over a Republican because he was a Republican, an 18-year-old Republican, mind you, this Democrat decided, yep, I'm going to kill a Republican today, went off, ran over the guy, killed him, only got 5 years for it. So you can murder a Republican and only get 5 years, but if you pray outside an abortion clinic, 11 years prison. That's the liberal justice system in place. So you think that they aren't beyond levying $500 million fines on every Trump supporter out there? I mean, gee whiz, they just indicted a bunch of people with the Trump campaign. I think Rudy Giuliani was one of them, for having alternate electors set up in Arizona for the 2020 election. Now, alternate electors aren't anything uncommon. In fact, Democrat presidential campaigns have done it all the time. The trouble is, it wasn't them, it was the Republicans who did it, and that suddenly makes it a crime. And therefore, they're being prosecuted for it, for, again, not violating the law. Just like with Trump, that real estate thing that I mentioned, everything he did was okay. That's just common industry folks have said this is common practice, nothing was wrong. The bank said this is common practice, nothing is wrong. But because he is Trump, they decided, you know what, the laws are different for him. So Democrats would, especially if Trump gets off of this, Trump, they would be right. This is a two-tier justice system. It's aimed at prosecuting Trump and Republicans, though. Democrats get away scot-free or with such laughably minimum sentences, they might as well not have be convicted of committing the crime, i.e. 5 years for murdering someone. Like first-degree murder. That person did it with motive and intent. Anyway, we've got more Silk or Joe Show coming up after this break, so I hope you will stick with us.
The Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, or FMCSA, is now accepting applications for 5 federal grant opportunities that enhance commercial motor vehicle safety. By investing in these projects, FMCSA envisions safer highways, reduced crashes, and a more secure transportation system. These grants will also make commercial vehicle driving safer and more efficient, while creating opportunities for our tribal communities, veterans and military families, and others within the trucking industry. Together, we can significantly reduce serious injuries and deaths on our nation's roadways. Prospective applicants are encouraged to learn more about these grant opportunities and how to apply at fmcsa.dot.gov/grants. Applications are due by April 19th. Those within our tribal communities are encouraged to submit applications for these grants. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
The wildly popular anime series Spy Family has been embraced by fans across the globe. The series, which is available for streaming on Crunchyroll, follows a very unconventional family with some very big secrets. Megan Shipman voices Anya.
In Spy Family, the husband Lloyd is a secret agent, and his wife Yor is a deadly assassin. But neither of them are aware of each other's true identities. The only one who knows is my character, their adopted daughter, Anya, who's a telepath.
Now a new adventure, Spy Family Code White, has arrived exclusively in theaters. Natalie Van Systine, who voices Yor, tells us about the new film.
Lloyd decides to take the family on a winter vacation, but it's really just a guise for his latest covert operation. But Anya mistakenly gets involved and triggers events that threaten world peace. If you're a Spy Family fan, or even if you're new to the franchise, I think you'll have a lot of fun at this movie.
Spy Family Code White is now playing in theaters nationwide. For more, visit spyfamily.movie. Remote work environments have given employees increased freedom and flexibility. With that comes a variety of security risks. With employees no longer tied to the office infrastructure, IT must securely manage remote employees' devices no matter where they are. A user's device can create an opportunity for hackers to breach an organization. That device must also easily connect users to IT resources so they can be productive. The Open Directory platform provider JumpCloud offers the solution for successful device management. JumpCloud VP Eric Brown.
With JumpCloud, you can manage your entire fleet, regardless of operating system or location, and create a scalable device management foundation. IT personnel can manage all types of devices from a single cloud console, and employees get to work on their preferred devices. JumpCloud helps you achieve compliance, monitor events, manage device data, enforce policies, patch machines, and more.
To learn more, visit jumpcloud.com.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila? She has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. It's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Silker Joe, everybody, co-host Joe with you all here today. You know, I say that like it's not my show, like I'm just subbing in or something. Anyway, while we wait for our current guest, what topic should I address while waiting for our current guest? Let's open up to an audience poll. Audience, what do you say? Really? Okay. Well, you know, instead of that, I'm going to talk about something else. There was a Minnesota Democrat politician arrested for burglary just days after meeting with far-left gun control group to push for safer communities, according to Gateway Pundit headline. So if you ever wanted to know why Democrats love gun control so much, I think that best encapsulates it, because they plan to violate your rights. Anyway, we now have our current guest, Jason Shepard, founder of Limkin Social Media, and despite being banned from Apple and Google Play app stores in January of 2021 while being number one in both stores, and after receiving multiple subpoenas by the House Select Committee on January 6th, Jason has grown Limkin to over 9 million users, including the Mainstream Radio Network. Jason, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Yep, glad to have you. So, in Australia, they had a mass stabbing incident, and there had been video of it that was posted on Twitter / X, and just called X, I guess, but it seems weird just calling it X after decades of Twitter. But Australia is—they've ordered him to ban it, not just in Australia, but worldwide. That's kind of shocking to me in the sense that they're telling a foreign company to ban something globally, and that seems to be a bit power beyond national courts.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, first and foremost, you have the question of how you would enforce something like that. And, I think there's a lot of audacity there, too, and I'm picking that up from yourself as well. So where they're not only saying that, hey, Twitter, you have to abide by Australian rules. Now, I would imagine that Australia, and I'm sorry, I said Twitter, too. But Australia could say, hey, if you don't do this, we'll ban you from our country. But as far as them actually saying to Twitter, we're going to enforce this and enforce fines upon you, I don't know how they would go about getting it, because they would have no jurisdiction in the United States where, obviously X is run from. But and at the same time, too, Joe, there's more audacity to it, because they're also saying the rest of the world can't see this because it happened in Australia. You know, you're getting into some serious draconian, entitlement, if you think about it, that is just completely violating everybody's right to free speech and free expression.
Yeah, it seems sort of like a move a dictatorship or like, North Korea might do. Well, like North Korea does do, I should say. So then is there any indication that Twitter or that Musk is just going to take this seriously and take it down, or does he plan to fight it? And, what can he even do to fight it to begin with if Australia has made up its mind?
Well, see, first and foremost, we have the same videos on Wimkin. It's just obviously we're nowhere near as big as Elon Musk is, or certainly his platform is. Right. You never know. But, after the app stores and everybody tried to ban us and the House Select Committee tried to shut us down, yeah, it's a little bit of a rough go. But, realistically, I would personally, just like he did initially, say no, but and then say, hey, it's up to you. If you want to ban us, let's see how your country feels about that. But, if you look at what Australia is asking for, they're only asking for, I think it's 65 instances of that video that were put up. And they said this does not even ban or ask you to ban anybody who's posting a new version of it. So what are they even doing? If the people are allowed to put these new videos up that are, containing the same exact graphic and, information and obviously images, I don't know what they're doing. And then case in point here, when the bishop himself says, I don't want this censored, that's the only way I would ever as a social media owner even consider doing that. If the person who's, been attacked and, his likeness is all over, these videos, I would definitely consider that if a person's asking me to do it that's, on the side of it. But when, a dictator is coming to me, especially after Australia was so draconian in their lockdowns with COVID, I would absolutely say no to that and say, bring it. Let's see how you can try to enforce this, because our courts are different than your courts.
Yeah, it seems almost like a test case for Australia, if they can get it with, you know, foot and door sort of thing. If we can get these, just these things banned, and if we can further convince Twitter that we're only after these 65 instances and not all of them, then maybe they can think later on, we'll go after the rest of the videos or go after other content that we disapprove of as a government.
Yeah, I think you're opening up a very interesting door and a very slippery slope for, you know, social media content and obviously any type of free speech argument. But, you know, when it comes down to it, you have the same thing happening. Obviously, we haven't seen it yet with the Restrict Act, even though the Restrict Act really was starting with kind of the TikTok ban, which we just see now. But, you know, you also have the European Union having their Digital Services Act, where they've already come after Musk and Facebook for what they thought was misinformation on the Israel and the Hamas war. So, you know, and they're talking about fining you up to 10% of your global annual revenue. So, again, I would say try. You could also, we would just say, hey, we're not paying this. And if you ban us from your country, if you ban us from the European Union, or if you ban us from Australia, let's see what your, you know, constituents think of that and your residents think of that, because, you know, the onus is now put on them to say why they're doing it and to justify the fact that, hey, we're going to start dictating what you're allowed to see, just like you said, North Korea does, as well as China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, it's like, what are they going to do? They issue an arrest warrant for Elon Musk? How is that even going to be enforced? I mean, I can see the Biden administration abiding by extradition rules and that, but, you know, it doesn't seem like a crime that would be worthy of extradition. It ain't murder or anything.
Yeah, I could never see them in any way, shape, or form doing anything about, you know, actual criminal enforcement. And it's kind of the same thing, too. It's an interesting little argument now to comes into play with DeSantis bill, banning minors under 14. Because what are you going to do there? Are you going to enforce criminal, you know, statutes and penalties for parents? You know, so we're getting really into some stuff that I didn't think we would get into in at least this soon. I figured this would all happen if, for some reason, Biden would win again. But, you know, I thought things would get much better under Trump. And assuming that he does win this election, then I think a lot of this is going to go away, because it's just so egregious to me, to where countries are saying, you as a private company, not even publicly held in the stock market, has nothing to do with law enforcement or any government entities. I don't know how they can come in and say, you have to take this down. What's your authority to do that?
I think the Biden administration kind of set the tone on that, with all this news coming out about how they manipulated information on the social media companies.
Most definitely. You
know, so these other countries, they're hearing about that maybe and being like, hey, why can't we do it? Except we'll do it much more direct and openly.
Yeah, you hit that on the head. I mean, now when, you know, Musk and Matt Taibbi released the Twitter files, I think a lot of us knew what was going to be contained in there, but not to the extent where, you know, the FBI and the United States government had residency in Twitter. They were literally paying for it. So they had office space in there, and they didn't care about the horrible amounts of, you know, child pornography and things that were actually rampant on Twitter at that point in time. Instead, they just cared about how Biden was being perceived and, you know, vaccine misinformation, that, or at least what they deemed in misinformation. So, you know, it puts a lot into light, and I think you're 100% right. They saw how relaxed these things were and how easy it was for the Biden administration to manipulate this aspect, and, you know, our ABC agencies to pretty much have free reign over what social media companies can and cannot do. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think that's 100% the segue of why we're seeing this now.
Mm-hmm. Well, appreciate you being on to talk about this. We only got like 30 seconds to end the segment, and there's the music outro. So give us the website for Wimkin so our listeners can check it out and find us on at Mainstream Radio Network on Wimkin.
Yeah, absolutely. We love having you there. So WIMKIN stands for World Must Know Now. It is W-I-M as in Mary, K-I-N as in Nancy.com. And we are also in the app stores after we beat our app store bans after 9 months of fighting.
Ah, terrific. Well, Jason Shepard, appreciate you being on the show. Listeners, you can check them out. We're coming to a break, but come back for more Silker Joe Show after.
A new graphic novel for young readers focuses on the importance of being true to yourself. Unhappy Camper, from author Lily Lamott and illustrators Anzu and Sunmi, tells the story of two sisters, one who embraces her Taiwanese culture and one who is indifferent. Claire and Michelle used to be best friends, but now the two sisters couldn't be more different. Michelle is willing to deny her Taiwanese culture to fit in, whereas Claire is proud of who she is. Sensing a rift between the two, their parents send them both off to Taiwanese American summer camp. Ultimately, Michelle must decide to embrace her culture and family or join the popular group at school. Which will she choose? Author Lily Lamott.
This is a heartwarming story about two sisters who learn to accept their differences and rebuild their bond. I hope it will encourage readers to recognize the importance of family and embrace their true selves.
The new graphic novel, Unhappy Camper, is now available wherever books are sold.
Calling all accredited institutions of higher education. Federal grant funding may be within your reach. I'm Evangela Hollowell with the U.S. Department of Transportation's Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration and a proud Hampton University alum. FMCSA offers a CMV Operator Safety Training Grant to educational institutions with opportunities to expand the number of commercial driver's license holders possessing enhanced operator safety training. This grant assists historically Black colleges and universities and minority-serving institutions. It also helps future alum like me get involved with the commercial motor vehicle industry. Prospective institutions with accreditation recognized by the U.S. Department of Education are encouraged to visit fmcsa.dot.gov/grants to explore the funding opportunity and learn how to start the application process. Together, we can significantly reduce serious injuries and deaths on our nation's highways. Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
The Open Directory platform provider JumpCloud recently surveyed international IT decision makers. Not surprisingly, one of the topics that was top of mind was AI. Most IT professionals see AI as a positive. However, many are concerned with its implications on security. Most respondents said that AI is outpacing their organization's ability to protect against threats. JumpCloud offers the solution to help manage potential security threats posed by AI. JumpCloud VP Eric Brown.
It's important to be aware of AI's possible security implications so you can take precautions to use these tools safely. JumpCloud offers security without the complexity. We give admins the tools to help users follow best practices, defend against common attack vectors, and eliminate the sprawl of accounts and passwords that can lead to risky access and data breaches.
To learn more about how JumpCloud can help protect your organization, visit jumpcloud.com.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny, when I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean, and there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times? When we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while. Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Before I wanted to get to the main topic of this segment, the first thing I wanted to add was, you know, our last segment, anytime I can dump on the FBI, I will. In the last segment, Jason Shepard was talking about how the FBI and DOJ, didn't really give a whit about all the child porn out there on social media. But boy, you say something bad about the Biden administration or say something true about the COVID shots, they'll want to pin you down. They'll want to pull you off of social media. But, you know, as far as the child pornography goes, you know, probably a lot of that is from the FBI anyway. So it's no wonder they didn't want to go after it, because they don't know what's theirs and what's someone else's. Because as I've mentioned before, the FBI has a bad habit of, in order to catch American citizens, they distribute child pornography worldwide. So perhaps some of that is part of their attempts at entrapment by creating a crime for you to be a criminal by seeing. Who knows? Anyway, now on to this. Now that I've dumped on the FBI a little bit, they're going to show up at my door and probably plant some of that crap on my computer. But until they do, we will continue with this segment. Could we have clips 6 and 7 back-to-back from MSNBC? And you're going to be hearing Alex Wagner, one of their hosts, and Congresswoman Ilhan Omar.
As a matter of sort of political strategy, do you see a connection between the fact that the far-right MAGA caucus is actively trying to oust Speaker Johnson, and today he went to Colombia to sort of maybe prove his far-right credentials?
No, I mean, it's very much of a coincidence. This is a man who is holding on to his speakership. He knows he might be on the chopping block. And it is not surprising that he would go out to Columbia University and stir up really more anger and hate and endanger the lives of young people who are at the encampment at Columbia University. They are worried what it means to grow up in a world where people can watch nearly 35,000 people be killed, to watch, you know, nearly 70% of them be children and women, to watch the destruction of 80% of infrastructure, to see a country withhold water, food, electricity, to starve people and carry out, you know, collective punishment. Israel's being hauled in front of the international courts and being accused of genocide. These kids don't want us to be complacent. They don't want their tax dollars to be complacent. And for the member who said, you know, like, don't waste your parents' money, they don't want their parents' money to go in supporting a genocide that they oppose. And so I do believe that history is going to be on their side.
All right, so you heard it from the horse's mouth. Well, no, AOC wasn't speaking. It was Ilhan Omar about how Israel is committing a genocide. Then she gave all the Hamas-approved statistics on there. Well, first of all, if all those women and children were killed, it is not because of Israel. It's because Hamas uses human shields, something Ilhan Omar doesn't believe. In fact, Ilhan Omar was the first one to point to bring credit to the hoax from Hamas about that hospital being targeted and blown up when it wasn't. You might remember that from last year. So, you know, she is a confirmed liar on this issue, but MSNBC has her on because they agree with everything she says. She hates Jews. They hate Jews. She loves Hamas. She loves rape. She thinks rape is great. She just said, you know, that it's history will see the rape as morally justified, the rapes that Hamas committed. And MSNBC seems to agree with her. No one corrected her, and they keep having her on, even though she's openly expressed that on multiple occasions. So there's that. And also, another thing to point out about that segment is that, about one of those clips, is their definitions of the far right. Now, hitherto, they've referred to the far right as being neo-Nazis, and Nazis and racist, anti-Semites, etc. But now they're saying that the far right supports Israel. That's kind of a weird position for the far right to take. If they hate Jews so much they want to wipe them out, they'd be on the side of Hamas. I'm not sure I understand what the MSNBC is driving at here with Alex Wagner, their host, talking about how, oh, the far right supports Israel. Indeed, Nazis support the Jewish state. That doesn't sound right, does it? It sounds more like they would be with Palestine, who hate Jews in general, and Israelis because they're Jewish. And all this talk about, oh, Palestine being a historic, just the struggle and Israel being oppressors, actually the history is a bit different than that. Palestine didn't even exist, at least the Gaza Strip didn't exist, where all this is going on right now, as a separate entity from Egypt, until like the late 1960s, when Israel beat Egypt in a war and seized that territory, much to their regret now, I'm sure. So for the first 20 or so years, at least, of Israel's existence, Gaza wasn't even a thing. It was under control of Egypt. And now the Egyptians, they don't want the Palestinians back. You know, other Arab countries usually see Palestinians as trash anyway. And based on the behavior of the ones that we have in this country and based on polls showing most Palestinians support rape as a weapon of war, I would say it's right to see them all as trash. So there's that. And just this conflating of the far right, the anti-Semites on the far right, the neo-Nazis on the far right with being pro-Israel is, it's so screwed up. But in their lust and zeal to find out, just to discredit the right at all, they'll just say the far right believes anything, no matter how contradictory it is. You know, if they finally come out and openly say Democrats are against free and fair elections because that means Republicans might get elected and it's a far right thing, well, they'll credit the far right with believing in free and fair elections instead of being neo-Nazis who believe in dictatorships. As a matter of fact, they've kind of done that. Maybe not MSNBC, but you had CNN saying the Constitution is a threat to democracy. So the Constitution, according to CNN, is along with the far right, a threat to democracy. So as much a threat to democracy as neo-Nazis, apparently. So I guess the left really does lump neo-Nazis with everything they don't like, which means the term neo-Nazi has just lost all meaning. But we saw that as early as 2017, when they started referring to everybody who supported Confederate statues remaining standing as neo-Nazis. That wasn't the case. Some people just wanted to not bother it because you think it's erasing history, or some people just liked the statue where it was. Some people didn't want change or whatever. Plenty of reasons they had nothing to do with the neo-Nazis, but liberals to this day say it's all neo-Nazis. Like, even when you explain to them, because I've done this, I have personal experience with this, even when you explain to a liberal, hey, that, you know, about Trump's remark, they still to this day believe that Trump said that neo-Nazis were fine people. And I was like, no, that's not what happened. This is what he said. And they said, well, who else was at the protest except neo-Nazis and proud liberals trying to erase white supremacy? You know, that's their standard right there. Anyone opposed to them and their points is a white supremacist. There's no room for nuance. There's no gray area. There's nothing of the kind. Just flat out, you oppose them, you're some racist and bigot of some flavor. And thus we get to them saying that the Constitution is a threat to democracy. And now they're saying that if you oppose wiping Israel off the face of the planet, if you oppose killing millions of Jews, you're a neo-Nazi somehow. Even though, as I said on the Al Nathan show earlier this week, Hamas is really the closest thing we have to Nazis these days. Ethnic supremacists, they got that. And then they want to wipe out all the Jews. They got that. Tyrannical government that just spreads massive propaganda to its population. Boy, they got that all right. Like, part of the reason why all these Gazans supported the Hamas mass rapes is because of just all this propaganda that Hamas has been feeding them. You know, these people, and at some point, you know, Ilhan Omar, she was talking about how, oh, it's so terrible that Israel is targeting civilians. First of all, there are no civilians in Gaza, according to the polling that's been done. All of them support the government. So if you support what the government is doing, then how does that make you innocent of what the government is doing? It's a very simple question there. So there's that issue there, but then there's also the issue with the human shields, which again the population seems to support, because as often as they are used as human shields, that they still have unwavering support of their government that uses them as human shields. So again, they seem to be just as complicit as the Hamas government. But there is a distinction between the two entities, though. You have, you know, basically this is like one of those not all Nazis were bad, not all Nazis knew about the Holocaust sort of argument. You know, you have the Nazi regime in power, and then that's running the show and demanding all this. Then you have the folks that they've brainwashed into supporting them. Well, you know, eventually you just run into this problem. You can't remove the folks in charge without killing their brainwashed goons. And, you know, it's a terrible thing that it got to that point. But it's at that point right now. And unfortunately, we've lost the same will to make these higher moral decisions that we had back in World War II. Otherwise, you know, if we frantically cared about civilian casualties and all that back in World War II, we'd be speaking German right now, okay? So, and certainly the Russians, the Soviet Union, which the New York Times spent several months praising for doing everything, and while attacking the United States back in 2017 on their 100th anniversary, so, you know, liberals love the Soviet Union, they weren't above making such decisions. They were perfectly happy to kill civilians and Nazis alike. No problem. They didn't distinguish between good and bad. And unfortunately, with the Gazan situation, that's about at the point where we're at. Especially, again, with the population supporting the government and the government using them as human shields. So, and then lying to the international community about and accusing Israel of genocide when Israel is just trying to not be genocide itself, because that's what Hamas wants. But MSNBC is where you go to listen to anti-Semitic, pro-Nazi diatribes while saying that the far right is responsible, so go figure. More at Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Americans are facing an excess of divisive news and polling, but a new survey from a sausage company shows that we agree on more than you might think. Johnsonville's national temperature check conducted by the Harris Poll found that 80% of Americans are exhausted by the negativity and anger in America, and many are craving connection. Nearly 90% of Americans wish the news and social media were less negative, while 80% agreed that there are people who they miss and want to reconnect with. And importantly, 91% said they don't have to agree with someone on every issue to enjoy a meal together. The survey was done as part of Johnsonville's new Keep It Juicy campaign, which aims to bring back connection, food, and fun. Jamie Schmelzer, Senior Director of Marketing, Johnsonville.
We know the world is full of serious problems sausage can't solve, but this data tells us that lots of people are ready to make more time for fun and togetherness, and that great food makes that easier. We're happy to play our small sausage part in helping that happen.
For more, visit johnsonville.com.
A new minimally invasive treatment option for prostate cancer shows successful outcomes without the side effects that often come with surgery or radiation. Prostate cancer affects 1 in 8 men in their lifetimes. The success of MRI-guided transurethral ultrasound ablation, TULSA, represents a revolution in whole-gland treatment for prostate cancer. Patients now have an alternative treatment option that has a favorable side effect profile compared to surgery, radiation, and thermal therapy. In the TULSA procedure, a small catheter-like device is inserted through the urethra into the prostate, where the tissue is heated, killing the cancer cells while protecting the sensitive nerves around the prostate. Dr. Stephen S. Raymond, professor of radiology, urology, and surgery at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA.
This image-guided therapy maximizes our ability to kill cancer cells while minimizing collateral damage to the prostate to achieve the ultimate trifecta in prostate cancer treatment, full local cancer control while maintaining urinary continence and potency.
For more information, go to sirmeeting.org, sponsored by Society of Interventional Radiology.
The results are in. In a nationwide double-blind taste test, Applebee's Classic Buffalo Boneless Wings reign supreme as America's favorite boneless wings. To celebrate, Applebee's is offering boneless wings for 50 cents each for a limited time, available for dine-in, to-go, or delivery. Head to your neighborhood Applebee's or visit applebees.com or mobile app to celebrate with this unbelievable deal. Price, participation, and selection may vary. Now that's eating good in the neighborhood. Sponsored by Applebee's.
John Nichols was making major strides in his career when at age 32, a water skiing accident left him critically injured. Fortunately, he had disability insurance.
For me, disability insurance was the safety net. I did not have to worry about the bills. I did not have the financial concerns.
Thanks to disability insurance that John had through work and on his own, he continued to receive an income until he could return to work. Learn more at protectyourpaycheck.org, a message from the Nonprofit Life Foundation.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Glad to have you all here through this hour of the program. We are wrapping up with another guest. We have Dr. Salvatore Giorgiani. He is Senior Science Advisor at the Men's Health Network and a past chair emeritus of the American Public Health Association and former Alumni Association board member of Columbia University School of Public Health. Dr. Giorgiani, always happy having the show. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. How about you?
I am doing fine, thank you. I have not drank any pasteurized milk, so I've been bird flu free lately. But what is this about fragments of the bird flu being found in pasteurized milk? Because, you know, the pasteurization process, isn't that supposed to get rid of stuff like that?
Well, yes, you're right. The pasteurization process is the most important way that we sterilize, essentially, milk products. What it does is it's heat at a certain specified temperature and sometimes pressure for a specified period of time, and that essentially sterilizes the milk. What it doesn't do, and why people are, I think, a bit confused about what they're hearing and reading, is that it doesn't take particles out of the milk. Obviously, if you filter milk, you're taking out all the fats and the non-soluble products that make milk milk. Otherwise, you end up with something else. So it's not unusual for cows to have various viral infections. There are a lot of very safe protocols that American farmers, Canadian farmers, utilize to keep animals that are infected or possibly infected out of the food supply chain in every way, including their milk, where milk is an important product. But what you get then, if you have a cow that has been not diagnosed or not seen to have bird flu, they're asymptomatic essentially, and milk is harvested and the milk is pasteurized and put into commerce, you may still have remnants of the virus, whether it be bird flu virus or any other kind of virus, in that milk. Having said that, also, there's a reason that virus injections or vaccinations are given intramuscularly, because you don't absorb viral products orally because they're destroyed in the gut. So, you know, the other safeguard here is that the product is sterilized, so the viral particles are not active, that the material that you might ingest is not absorbable. The body just excretes that out. And then the third is that the sterilized, non-digestible viral particles that you might be ingesting are just not bioactive. So even if they were somehow gotten into the system, they wouldn't do anything to mRNA, DNA, any other NA that you want to think of. So here I think we have a great example of one of the most horrible casualties of the COVID experience, which is loss of trust and the loss of truth. So we're seeing these sensational media articles, which of course catch people's eyes, particularly family members, particularly dads and moms who are trying to provide healthy nutritional aspects for their family. Oh my goodness, am I going to be hurting my child by letting them drink milk? No, I think, as I've always said, we have to be alert and aware, but not alarmed at some of the things that we read in the media.
Yeah, and the FDA, I don't think they really helped the case themselves either, because according to this NBC News article on them, the FBI, on this thing, the FDA, they came out and said, well, it's harmless, but we're still conducting tests. And it's like, well, wait a minute. How can you say it's harmless, but also you're conducting tests to make sure it's harmless? And, you know, especially as you said, in the wake of all of what was done with, during COVID, you know, a statement like that just seems very suspicious, even though, you know, as you've just said, there really is no problem going on here.
Yeah. The other statements that I see flying around are, it's almost impossible. And it's true. In the absolute scientific context, it is appropriate to continue to do tests because anything can happen. It's also appropriate to do tests on so many other parts of our lives. A test on your car, you know, you've got voltmeters on your car that are always essentially testing the activity in your car, but it's unlikely you're having a catastrophic problem with your car. So I think it's scientifically proper to continue to do set tests. They wouldn't be fulfilling their mandate for food supply testing. And it is also true that because anything can happen, that they can't say absolutely categorically that it's not going to cause a problem because it's the scientific mindset. So those of us who have been in science for, as I have, 50 plus years, and younger people even a few years, you learn to take that commentary in the appropriate context. So those conversations have been going on a long, long time, even back before I had long, brown, curly hair. You know, those conversations were going on amongst the scientific community. I think now what we've seen has changed, and this is also something that we've experienced because of the COVID information deluge, if you will. We see those conversations, those debates going on in public. Look, Joseph, we can't decide one way or the other if aspirin, low-dose aspirin, is a good thing or not a good thing. We're still debating how the best way to treat diabetes has been, and that's part of the scientific process, and that does serve people well, but it can be very confusing unless you understand that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, on that note, the stuff in Tylenol, I'm not acetaminophen.
Acetaminophen.
Yeah. So my sister-in-law, you know, she's going to have a baby soon, and she's telling me about how, you know, it has to do Tylenol for pregnancies and stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm kind of curious. I looked it up, and it's like the science wasn't even settled on that, it turns out. And I was looking up because I was trying to figure out what, like, the dosage would be, or what, you know, if I should get extra strength or regular. And it's like, you know, it's not even, the science isn't even settled on that. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, well, that's good to know. So it's just, like, you said, though, part of the scientific process.
Yep. And that's what the public wants. I think we heard some very famous or perhaps infamous government scientists say, I am science. You know, you criticize me, you criticize science. And when I make a statement, I'm speaking as a scientist. So you shouldn't challenge my statements. That's wrong. It's plain old wrong. The scientific process in humanity is best served when the scientific inquiry goes on unfettered. Whether it's a nutty idea or a bad idea or a really important idea, you really need to continue the investigation, and that's what serves the public the best. Again, that debate is played out over the past eons in private, but now it's a very public debate.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Georgiani, appreciate you being on the show to talk about this and put listeners' concerns at ease about bird flu being in their milk. And certainly next time I go to the store, I won't hesitate to buy the regular milk unless I'm having heartburn, because then it's almond milk for me. But anyway, listeners, appreciate you tuning into the show this week. As always, our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, and we're on Getter, GETTR.com, @SilkerJoeShow. And of course, the Main Street Radio Network has its social media pages, Facebook @MainStreetRadioNetwork, Wimkin @MainStreetRadioNetwork, and Twitter @MainStreetRadio. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.